Greetings, Chicagoland. Thank you for tuning in to the weekly program, Building Community, Strengthening Nations, based on improving lives through public service and volunteerism. Today's presentation is brought to you by the Forum to Achieve Altruism, Compassion, and Tolerance, the FACT organization, with more than a 75-year legacy of promoting peace, harmony, equality, and social justice for all. Building Community, Strengthening Nations features newsmakers and movers and shakers engaged in enlightening discussions on current issues and events that positively impact our diverse communities. The FACT organization invites you to contact us for general information or referral services, volunteer opportunities, and suggestions, questions, or comments regarding programming topics and guests. Please call FACT at 773-424-8002 to reach our 24-hour voicemail and facsimile. Our email address is faactorg@aol.com. Now tell your friends to tune in to FACT every Tuesday evening at 7:30 p.m. We're streaming live over the internet at www.thechicagolighthouse.org. My name is Ruth M. Fairfax Frazier. I am the founder and executive director of the FACT organization, and today I am so pleased to serve as your host. FACT is always excited about this opportunity to share time with you, our most valued listening public, with different weekly topics of interest that positively influence our communities. However, as we always say, this can only be accomplished with your help. The fact is, we all need each other, and by uniting our efforts, we can make a positive difference for everyone. In a nutshell, FACT's combined vision and mission is to help create a better world through educating the public and coalescing with others to eradicate biases and prejudices, as well as hate crime.
One of five daughters, and it's my pleasure to bring up the baby of the family. This is my younger sister, Africa Pace Brown. She's gonna help us sing the blues.
Yeah, there's always the blues. Even bebop was about blues. About Thelonious Monk's blues, Blue Monk. Charlie Parker's blues, Blue Bird, Miles Davis blues, all blues. Talking about the blues, people.
Greetings, everyone. This is Ruth Fairfax Frazier with FACT. Building Community, Strengthening Nations, here on Chris Radio. This is Jazz Appreciation Month, and to kick off the celebration, we are going to interview two fabulous women who are doing great things in the field of jazz and so much more with music and other accomplishments and things that they're involved in. So we're going to let them introduce themselves. They've been here before. You guys have asked for them to come back, and now they're here at this very special time to share their story with you. Let's start off with the eldest.
Okay. That would be me. And thank you so much, Ruth, for having us on. This is Maggie Brown. I am a vocal artist and songwriter, director, very interested in the positive outcome of our future and working with youth.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you have with you?
My sister, who is the youngest of seven children of Oscar Brown Jr.
Africa Brown. It's so nice to be here. Been here before. Very glad to be here again. Mm-hmm. I'm the youngest of the seven children, as Maggie said. I'm the only child of my mother and father, Oscar Brown Jr. and Jean Pace.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, let's start off before you tell us about your background. Tell us about your dad, because this is Jazz Appreciation Month, mm-hmm. and hailing from Chicago, Illinois, that is the name that everyone thinks of when we talk about jazz. So tell us about the famous Oscar Brown Jr.
You want to start? Or, no. So, well, I was just thinking of how, you know, he's a wordsmith of rhyme, and we don't have enough time to expose you to half of what he wrote. But he was just a prolific writer. And, you know, he hit the scene. People are making us realize that when Oscar was really soaring, he was very major artist, you know, much like Harry Belafonte, Sidney Poitier, Sammy Davis Jr. Some of the headlines were saying, Sammy, move over.
Okay.
You know, all the great ones rolled into one. Mm-hmm. And so he hit the scene, and that was more so in the 60s. But then he became an outspoken black artist that at a time when they were killing folks that were trying to galvanize mass thought. Mm-hmm. In a way that didn't support whatever the government's program was or the record industry's program was, which, according to what's going on now, they didn't never have no good intentions in mind, mm-hmm. unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But he never stopped writing and never stopped producing and still working with professionals as well as youth to develop their talents and help them to, he always talked about us being able to come to our own economic rescue by utilizing our talents mm-hmm. in a positive way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what would you like to add, Africa?
Oh, just that, you know, everything that Maggie said, I second. And I believe that it's a real wondrous thing that now, in 2018, when my father is gone, that Maggie and I are in the position to help popularize his music, his poems, his plays, all of the things that he has done with his life's work, and the importance of his lyrics. And we can't even really skip around the fact that just recently our 45th
president
has been using our father's lyrics to basically as a hate speech mm-hmm. towards immigrants. And it had been happening since he was in, you know, campaigning, mm-hmm. you know. But he did it again on his 100th day in office, and he's done it recently, just so recently that MSNBC, CNN called my sister and I, and they questioned us, and we were able to go on national television, set the record straight about the fact that our father's lyrics are being used by one of the most popular men in the world
ever.
At this moment.
Never giving credit to who wrote it.
And it's a serious thing.
Totally out of context.
Totally
taking it out of context. Totally taking it out of context. But I think that it also just shows how important his lyrics are and how they stand the test of time. Mm-hmm. And how regardless, even if a man like him uses my father's lyrics, it still comes back around to where my sister and I end up getting to talk to the world mm-hmm. and expose our father mm-hmm. for who he really is and how we feel about him and how much we love him mm-hmm. and the people who know him. And know what he was about.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Share just a little bit of some of the works that we know him for.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, so when he started out, Dad would go up to artists sometimes and ask them if there was a song he could pin lyrics to. He did that with the Adderleys and came up with Work Song. He ended up writing lyrics to All Blues. Everybody knows those lyrics. The Sea, the Sky, and You and I, Sea and Sky, You and I. Anybody who thinks they sing in jazz has had to sing that song. And it's a jam session favorite, you know.
Mm-hmm. Brown Baby.
Brown Baby, Dat Dare. So those are some of the
Signifying
more
monkey.
Yeah, popular ones. And, of course, The Snake. The Snake was just, it's a timeless tale about showing kindness to evil. It's kind of like an Aesop's fable. So he would do that in his nightclub back before you were born. And when I was a little girl, I would see him on stage doing those songs and telling those stories. And the thing was, early on, again, he would take the inspiration from just the neighborhood, from mm-hmm. growing up in the Bronzeville, Southside area, and the street cries of the street peddlers and vendors. He made songs about that, the Watermelon Man, and really mm-hmm. Signifying Monkey was mm-hmm. a dirty little thing,
it
folks
really
used
was.
To say,
really
and he was. Cleaned it up, as he said, you know, and to get it on a record.
Yeah. Or something as beautiful and poetic as the Rag Man.
Oh,
you know,
rags
that call,
and
Rags
old
and Old Iron.
Iron.
Now that, I used to be afraid of that song because at the end, he would get so in character and he would get so emotional that he would cry and he would turn into the Rag Man. Mm-hmm. And him doing that was too much for me as a little girl. It would make me cry and I would go hide in the dressing room or whatever. Mm-hmm. I remember that vividly.
That's the thing about Oscar Brown Jr. was his theatrics.
Yes.
And fortunately, those apples did kind of fall our way.
You know, we got it bad.
Yes, with
we
theatrical. And we started in theater because of that. That's another thing. Oscar started on radio. As far as his acting
career, Destination Freedom, Secret City,
and things with Studs Terkel and Mark Durham and wonderful people that if you don't know about those people, go look into them, too, because
they led
great, intriguing lives, and they contributed to our history. The thing that our father and his father before him left in us is we have this talent and we want to be famous and we want to make nice money and go places and do all that, but that we just feel like we have a responsibility, you know, to do something, to use these talents, to take this attention and try to do something that's uplifting. It'd be different if there were no problems in the world and our communities were in great shape and we all knew how to treat each other. But considering what plagues us.
We need to bring the generations together.
Right.
And our father wrote about that. Yeah. He wrote songs about that. A new generation is now on the scene. A new generation, not ugly or mean. We're standing for right, demanding fair play for everyone. And we just won't have it any other way. So that's what we're about. We're about trying to uplift ourselves through this music. With each other, together, and we're not trying to have our father's name attached to any type of hate speech, or don't use our dad's song as your war cry, or you know, against immigrants or anyone. Because
who's not an immigrant other than the Native Americans? I mean, who has the nerve? I just don't understand. I know my ancestors came in chains, and we did not come over through immigration. But other than that. Mm-hmm. Even the woman he's married to, all that, it doesn't even make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. And speaking of the Native Americans, Maggie has been a part of the Gathering of Nations, which is the largest
powwow in North America. Mm-hmm. It happens annually at the end of April.
And fortunately, I've been able to go as well, my son, and we're going again.
Yeah, we'll go at the end of April. And so it's in Albuquerque, and it's called
the Gathering of Nations.
And through this weekend, that's just potent with Native American culture and everything to do with Native American culture, drumming, singing, dancing, competitions, the regalia
is
so beautiful.
It's the most amazing thing.
They also put on the Miss Indian World.
So it's like Miss America, but for them.
For Native,
and it's so beautiful.
And every year, a Miss Indian World is chosen.
And she
reigns for the year. And so I get to help with the stage management of the talent presentation.
And beautiful. I get to help with the hospitality section.
Oh, the hospitality
section.
Of all the great and, sponsors just, and people that come.
I'm just so overjoyed.
It's
a spiritual experience. So we're saying that to say that not only, you know, do we not want our father's name to be associated with someone who's using it as a war cry against immigrants, we stand with every other brown person and person of color.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, 100%. You know, and my father always says, he always raised us that way. So
yes,
that's where we still are.
I wonder if the dude will use it again. I just wonder, you know, because we did.
We called him out.
Nationally say
we did call him out nationally.
No, you don't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's not forget the fact that he's saying it, but it's like he's living it. You know, he's telling the story of the snake, but you are being that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you knew darn well he was a snake before we voted him in. So
that's the punchline.
That's the new punchline of the song. So, you know, it's
Well, ladies, you, in addition to this wonderful event that's coming up, and we really applaud you for all the work that you do. You do things on a local level as well. Tell us some of the initiatives that are going on here in Chicago.
Well, yes, we're talking to the Logan Center. We might be able to do something with the students they'll serve over the summer. Work with the Blue Gargoyle Youth Services Organization. Yeah, bringing the Blue Gargoyle back in Hyde Park.
The ones who just did the taping of us with
and
Columbia.
Then, but we've worked with Columbia College's Doc Unit for so they have a documentary filmmaking specialty that they do, and so we were fortunate to have them come out and we filmed at we had an archive visit to Chicago History Museum that day, and we also visited the historic Rosenwall where some of the elders gathered in the lobby for us to perform for them during February.
That's right.
It was ironic because they were there to tape us and making this little documentary, and that's when we got the call from the MSNBC people saying we're gonna send a car for you guys.
And they did.
And what else are we doing?
What do you call it? The
You're dancing, you're doing stuff with Muntu Dance Theater.
Yeah, definitely.
Helping with the, you know, even if it's the wardrobe part. Africa's a African dancer and a drummer.
Yes.
But whether she's doing that sort of work or even helping with Muntu to make sure that for their next thing, the costumes are all straight and, fixed and altered and ironed and pressed so that they're all raring to go. And it's really great to do things like work with Imani A. Payne and different organizations. Because sometimes it may not be the exact project we're working on, but always glad to lend our energy to other good things that are happening out here. Working with Rebuild Foundation, with the Astor Gates and those guys.
And that was a wonderful thing with the... people with the films that are doing the films.
Yeah, so there's the film. We did some film archive workshops to help people learn how to preserve. A lot of people don't have reel-to-reel.
Candace
Ming works with Jackie Stewart at U of C, and so we were able to partner and just look at our own archive and how others might be able to preserve, whether it's the photos or the videos or the film that people have of their families, just, you know, learning to cherish, value, and preserve. Mm-hmm. Those materials and memories.
Yeah, so shout out to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, ladies, I can't believe we only have a minute or so left.
I know the time flies when you have fun.
I know you're going to be talking to some good friends of ours next.
Yes.
We love them, and you know, they've been so supportive. Many of the things, if I look back in the last 10, 20 years of what I've been doing, everywhere I go and talk about things, I'm talking about events that Shirley Jazz Institute has helped to support, sponsor, envision, create. You know, it's been a real pleasure. And as we watch Lauren Deutsch hand off the leadership to Miss Heather, I must say, when Lauren spoke to me about her plans, I said, boy, have you know, what's Heather doing? So I'm so glad that she's in that position now, because I know she's going to do a great job.
Yes,
it's a great organization.
This is a historic moment.
It is. Well, our audience needs to know that our upcoming guest will be Heather Ireland Robinson, Executive Director of the Jazz Institute of Chicago.
Yes.
And before we begin speaking with her, I want our audience to know a little bit more about you. So since we can't go into more detail, kindly share your website and how they can follow what you're doing.
Well, I have www.maggiebrown.com. But also we have a Two Brown Sisters Facebook page. So the numeral two, the word brown sisters, which is what we are in a few ways.
And there's information on Maggie's page
about us as well. And I want people to look into Back Alley Jazz Project. The Back Alley Jazz Project will take place in South Shore July 14th. There's been an article in the newspaper. There'll be more information. And while we don't have time, it's going to be a fun community building, musical, jazz, improvisational, artistic thing that not only do I get the pleasure of being a part of this year, but I'm certainly going to be encouraging people to do more of that sort of thing on their own, in their own neighborhoods, because we used to do a lot more of that, and it did help build community and help us feel like neighbors.
Yes.
And I think, you know, we have to learn how to be more humane to one another, even though we got people in high places that are setting really bad examples.
Mm-hmm.
But we know right from wrong.
We do. We have some wonderful teachers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And as we close this segment, ladies, please share that website once again with us and spell it for our audience.
Okay. So www.maggiebrown.com, MaggieBrown.com. Or you could check us out on Facebook. Two Brown Sisters have a Facebook page, as do I, so the numeral Two Brown Sisters. I'm Maggie, and this is my sister, Africa Brown.
Thank you for having
thanks
us.
Thanks for asking about us, and we look forward to coming anytime you
indeed
invite us.
Okay, definitely. Well, you'll be back soon, ladies. Thanks again.
All right. Bye-bye.
This is segment two of our program today of Jazz Appreciation Month, or JAM. And as we celebrate the relationship between jazz and justice, we look beyond the music to the dynamic ways jazz has played a transformative role in social justice, musicians' rights, and equality since its birth in America. So we want to thank the two artists that you just heard, Africa Brown and Maggie Brown, as they shared the story of their famous dad, Oscar Brown Jr., who hails from Chicago, Illinois. And joining us now is Heather Ireland Robinson, the new executive director of the Jazz Institute of Chicago. Welcome to the program, Heather.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And I feel like I'm in such great company, not just with you, but with Maggie and Africa and the spirit of OBJ being with us, too. So thank you so much.
Well, we know that you come from a rich musical background personally, in addition to the wonderful things that are in store for us with your new role here at the Jazz Institute in Chicago. So let's start off with you telling us about your background, Heather.
Sure. I actually have a theater background, a degree in acting and drama from the theater school at DePaul University. And being able to do that and get my master's really set me on a path to arts management. I mean, I considered myself a creative child. We were blessed to have music in the home and theater classes and dance classes, and I was blessed to have parents that really just created a nurturing environment for the arts, but it was making the decision to make it official, make it formal with a graduate school degree that really set me on this path. And I realized in my last years at the theater school that as much as I love being on stage, I probably, you know, you'll see me retire to commercials, don't get me wrong, but I really was inspired more by the opportunity to give people the opportunity to be artists. And what that means is creating the kind of structures and organizations and infrastructure for artists to really thrive and shine. And that's been my motivation through my 20-year career in arts administration.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us a little bit about that career. Where did you start, and how did you evolve to where you are now?
Yeah, so I started not long after graduate school. I worked at the Chicago Park District in their cultural arts department, and my job was the beginnings of what is now After School Matters. It was Gallery 37 in the Parks, the wonderful arts program that then-Mayor Daley's wife, Maggie Daley, started. And this was a groundbreaking arts program downtown where young people could be apprentices of older, seasoned veteran artists. Well, we took that program into city parks. And so as a young arts admin, I was responsible for creating partnerships in different parks. I mean, from West Pullman all the way out to parks by O'Hare. So I was all over the city in my little red tracer, my little red car. But it was really about these partnerships with organizations across the city, Gus Giordano Dance, Free Street Theater, and a lot of independent artists, and putting them in parks so that they could work with neighborhood children on high-level, and when I say children, I should say teens, but high-level arts programming right in their neighborhoods. And it was a jobs program. These students got paid to be a part of it. From there, I went to many different arts organizations, Marwin, ended up at After School Matters many years later, where I was a program specialist, again, going out to parks and creating these partnerships. I also was honored to manage what they call the downtown program of Gallery 37, working closely with Maggie Daley. So it's like I came full circle back around to be able to work with her to revitalize the program in then what was the new Millennium Park.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, many, many different organizations, Jazz Unites, Elevate, which was an after-school program at Revis, funded by the Quad Communities Development Corporation. So it's been a wonderful trip around the world. Most recently, I was at the Southside Community Arts Center in Bronzeville, and then at the Beverly Arts Center in the Beverly neighborhood as executive director of both of those organizations. So those were my last two places that I was.
Well, joining us in studio is Mr. Marshall Matthews, our co-host and vice president of the FACT organization. And I know he has some specific questions he has for you as well, Heather.
Sure.
Heather, when it comes to the Jazz Institute of Chicago and its historical contribution to the cultural atmosphere as well as to the art scene and social movement in our city with our youth and adults. Could you tell us more about the Jazz Institute of Chicago?
Sure. So we started in 1969. with about six people who loved jazz and wanted to see it last, wanted to see it continue on for young people, and didn't want it to be a dying art form. And of those six people, they were into different kinds of jazz music. The organization kind of died out, and then it was revitalized in 1974 by another group of passionate jazz lovers who, again, didn't want to see this music go away. You know, we have trends in music, so they wanted to make sure that that stayed. The Jazz Institute was instrumental in starting the Chicago Jazz Fest, which is one of the largest free jazz concerts of its kind, you know, in the country. So giving opportunities to artists, giving opportunities for people to hear jazz. It's the 40th anniversary this year of the Jazz Festival, and we're going to be asking people to give us their Chicago Jazz Fest story. Everybody has a story about, you know, the first time they heard this. My story is my father telling us to be quiet and stop running around and making noise so we could really hear the music. So, right, he would close his eyes in the middle of Grant Park and listen to the music. So everyone has a story about what this music has meant to them and what the festival has meant to them. Jazz itself is a great unifier of class, age, race, economic background. I mean, if you look at a jazz stage, you see people speaking the common language of the music, and that, to me, is really what the music is about. Everybody gets a turn to play. Everybody gets a turn to be themselves. And so, to me, it's just a symbol of the way things should be and the perfect example of true harmony among people.
And, of course, jazz is our true American music.
It is, and next year we'll be celebrating the fact that it came to Chicago 100 years ago, and that coincides with the Jazz Institute's 50th anniversary.
Wonderful.
So it's just going to be an amazing year for all of us.
Well, the Jazz Institute is also intergenerational. What are you doing to promote youth continuing this genre?
So we have several education programs, which I'll get into in just a second, but our largest free public program is Jazz City, where every other month, we have a free jazz concert in city parks. To me, it doesn't get any better than that, that you could leave your house and walk across the street and go hear music, or you could be playing basketball or coming into the park to do something else, and there is a professional level jazz concert for free. So when you talk about accessibility, that's the kind of thing that, to me, is just the pinnacle of anybody being able to come and enjoy. You don't have to pay. You don't have to be dressed up. There is no drink cover. There are no drinks, so it makes it possible for everyone to come. We have a Jazz Master's residency program in schools all across the city, starting with kindergarten on up to high school. We also do a Jazz Links program that includes a student council. So you've got young musicians that get to come together and talk to each other. They get to network with each other. They also work with our millennial artists to guide them. And we don't just teach them how to play instruments. They learn what it means to work in a club, what it means to get your pictures taken properly, what it really means to have a career in the arts, whether you're going to be a musician or an arts administrator. So I love the student council for that. It really gives students the full picture of what it means to be an artist. We are working with the Chicago Public Schools this year, and we have been for a few years, on the All-City Jazz Band Festival. Mm-hmm. So bringing 12 schools, if not more, the numbers are still coming in, together to show what they do and then work with mentors and clinicians on how to improve what they're doing in a big band and a small combo session. We also have Jazz Links jam sessions. We have kids as young as 7 on up through 19, and we get some of our other students that have graduated and gone away to come back to play with our house band at the Chicago Cultural Center.
Oh, wow.
And we don't play. We use our high-level musicians. They love it. They love sharing. And it really becomes, you know, it goes from student and teacher to just these cats playing together on stage and really learning from each other. So it's a beautiful thing. We do that every month. Another exciting thing that has been started by staff here is the Women's Jazz Leadership Initiative to really give voice and create community around what professional women musicians in Chicago and female students of jazz are going through. So it's a positive musical exchange and dialogue and connection for them. Beauty of jazz is that everybody, I want to talk about it in terms of creating community. So everybody plays a standard together. Everybody has to play the same notes. You've got the same chord changes. And then you get the chance to play as an individual and to improvise and riff off of those basic themes. So you get to really express yourself and your interpretations of the music as a musician. And then you get a certain amount of time. So then it's time to pass it on to your colleague. It's time to give up your spotlight and let someone else shine and, again, interpret the music and the notes and the feeling of the music with different instruments. And then you all come back together, play something, and then there's a resolution to the whole piece. So that's the beauty and the uniqueness of the actual form of jazz music.
Well, Heather, we truly appreciate you spending this time with us. And I can't believe that we are literally running out of time for the program.
It was wonderful. It went fast.
It really did. How can we learn more about involvement with the Chicago Jazz Institute?
Well, you can visit our webpage at jazzinchicago.org. Get it? It's like the Jazz Institute, but we want to highlight jazzinchicago.org. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. So please visit us, you know, across those platforms. Facebook is great because you get updates immediately about what's going on, and you can see what we're doing to celebrate Jazz Appreciation Month and our 49th birthday, which is on April 11th. So please go to Facebook, go to our webpage, and see all the things that we have coming up this month. We hope to see everyone out there.
Okay. And we want to, again, congratulate you as the new executive director. And we want to share our love for Lauren Deutsch.
Absolutely. Yes. I'll be sure to pass it on to her. She passed me the ball a month ago. She was here for 22 years. And I worked here many years ago, so we have a close working relationship. And, yes, she's just stepped to the side. So I'll be sure to let her know.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you both so much. And thanks for all you do.
Thank you.